Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks superfan. I'll be one of your hosts alongside with Nick, the Chiefs superfan. It is Football Sunday. We're going to be recapping all the games from across the league with the various superfans. Before we get started with that, though, I do want to talk about our sponsor. Big thank you to BetDSI, BetDSI.com. Over 20 years in the online gambling business, you can bet on everything from sporting events to elections, you name it. Sign up now. Use the promo code FANUP10. Get a free $10 deposited in the account alongside whatever you deposit. In addition, you'll get a 100% bonus on your first deposit. Then you'll be able to use their easy-to-use, fast-paying system. One of the very best in the business, guys. Excellent customer service. So please use BetDSI.com. Use the promo code FANUP10. Get your extra $10, all your bonuses. And then gamble away. Have some fun. Let us know how it goes. All right, now on to the show.
And it's now time to recap these games. I am Nick, your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, and I am here with our first game. It is the Giants in their win 16-13 over the Saints. This was sort of a weird game. I think most people, given the offensive firepower of both of these teams, they were really expecting a shootout, but 16-13, that is not what we saw here. So Sam, our Giants superfan, what happened here, and how did you guys pull this one away?
You know, the Giants turned the ball over a lot. They had three turnovers in the first half, two of them in the Saints end of the field. So, you know, that really hurt our scoring. Eli Manning looked good. The receivers looked good. The defense looked great. It was one blocked kick blocked field goal that resulted in a touchdown. That's really the biggest play of the game. Victor Cruz iced the game with a catch on the one to set up a game-winning field goal. But, you know, I'm happy with this win. The defense showed that they can bottle up a high-powered offense. Eli Apple, the rookie, played extremely well. Olivier Vernon had some plays. But overall, it's a good win for the Giants. Great end of the game execution if we didn't have last season. And we're 2-0 and off to Washington next week.
And for you, Chris, you know, I mean, this was, I don't know whether you're happy in terms of how your defense performed here or confused at how anemic the offense was, given what we saw last week against Oakland. What are your takeaways from this game and how it played out?
Well, I mean, it's a mixed bag. There are things to be optimistic about. Dennis Allen, the new defensive coordinator for the Saints, put a hell of a game plan together. You know, this is one of those things where the Saints played very well on defense. But again, I think we were talking about it in the Slack, our Slack chat. This is with P.J. Williams getting hurt. This is their top, out of their top five corners going into the season, all of them are gone. Ken Crawley, the kid who gave up the completion to Victor Cruz this week that iced the game, is the same one that they targeted against Crabtree. This is somebody who really, at best, should be on the Saints practice squad. So it's a tough pill to swallow. Injuries happen to every team. But they're really piling up in New Orleans, and they're attacking one position. And I think that's a big difference in this game. Offensively, and hats off of the Giants, they put together a game plan that worked against the Saints. The defensive line got a lot of pressure. The Saints offensive line didn't play as well as it did last week, so hopefully that's something that can turn around for Atlanta moving forward. But, man, it's back-to-back weeks to lose to closing seconds. It hurts. It really does.
One for you, Sam. I mean, you had Janoris Jenkins and Eli Apple, your first-round pick, and, you know, one of your biggest free agent acquisitions, each come up in terms of the secondary, and especially against, you know, possibly one of the most potent offenses in the NFL. Has this game changed your opinion in terms of how far this Giants team can go this year?
I'm starting to get a little worried about the offense. They do have the weapons there, so I think that's going to come around. But this defense is exactly what you want. You know, they can rush with four. They have Jonathan Hankins is taking a huge step up this offseason. Olivier Vernon is playing extremely well. So they can drop back seven into coverage, and they have four or five guys that can cover. So, they have they have a game plan to win, and if they can score some points, then this defense would love, they can pin their ears back, go after the quarterback, and let those cornerbacks make plays. So, yeah, this is exactly the Giants team you want to see. And I keep saying, and they keep proving me wrong, I went on that rant about how Victor Cruz isn't the Giants' X factor, and it's two straight weeks where he's proving me wrong, so I have to apologize to him, but, you know, I mean, maybe I will come up with something.
Well, and for you, Chris, you mentioned the injuries you guys sustained. I mean, I don't know how much better that or more talented this offense can be. How much has this game changed your perceptions of the way that the season is headed?
I mean, it really it doesn't. I think the defense 2 weeks in a row now played well. I can't really put the loss on either one of them. The offense needed to step up today. Pete Carmichael took over the play calling duties the first half of this game. The Saints offense didn't really get started until Sean Payton took him back over. That's going to be a big key to watch moving forward. I don't know why they keep giving Carmichael the play calling duties. He forgets he has a running back. Payton, though not the most balanced offense in the world, he's much more balanced. So, it'll be interesting. This starts Falcon Hate Week in New Orleans, so yeah, we got to move on and get ready to beat the hell out of them.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys, and good luck to you guys next week.
Thank you.
All right. This is your Seahawks super fan. I'm going to be talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Cincinnati Bengals, another great division matchup between two bitter rivals. Honestly, these are two excellent teams. We all knew this was going to be maybe one of the games of the week, and it lived up to the billing. The good news is it wasn't nearly as chippy, not nearly as many penalties as when they faced in the playoffs last year. It was a much cleaner game. D'Angelo Williams of the Steelers continues to look awesome. 94 yards on the ground, in addition, had a great touchdown catch. Probably the big surprise, though, you know, you've got two of the marquee wide receivers in the league in A.J. Green and Antonio Brown. Both held under 50 yards, both pretty much kept in check. Big Ben had an okay game, not his best, threw a couple of interceptions, but did what was necessary to win. Cincinnati, they played pretty well for most of the game, but as is often the case, could not close a deal versus Pittsburgh. A lot of times these kind of prime games for them, they seem to struggle with. It came down to the last couple of possessions, unfortunately, for the Bengals. Both those possessions ended in a turnover. The iffy one, though, was with about 2 minutes left in the game, Tyler Boyd was running with the ball. Looked like he was tackled down. It was ruled that he had fumbled the ball. I don't know about that call. I think that it seemed pretty clear in all the replays that he was down after being hit by James Harrison, and then the ball came out. But, you know, so it goes. Obviously, the solution if you're Tyler Boyd is just don't leave any doubt and don't lose the ball. But it is what it is. The other thing that I want to make sure to mention, though, is that the two tight ends for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Jesse James and Xavier Grimble, both had touchdowns. Especially Jesse James. That's a name that if you pay a lot of attention, you should know. Greg, our Steelers superfan, is probably the only person on the planet that you've been hearing talking about Jesse James. But that's the sort of insight you get from a super fan, so great call-up by him. I think Jesse James is going to be a very good tight end for them going forward. Obviously, they had very, very different plans going into the season, but it looks like what looked like it had the potential to be a major problem is shaping up to be a pretty good position group for them. But at least for right now, Pittsburgh's in the driver's seat. Cincinnati is below them looking up. Not a lot to think that that's going to change anytime soon. These are still two terrific teams, but certainly there is no doubt this weekend who at this juncture is the better of the two.
All right, we now move to the Ravens' 25-20 win over the Browns in Cleveland. I'm joined with both our Ravens superfan Don and our Browns superfan Ben. But first to you, Don. You know, this was a game in which the Ravens were trailing for quite some time. I think to the surprise and to the horror of a lot of people who had eliminator picks and other things going on in this game. You know, both quarterbacks obviously had up and down games in this. But you know, how did you guys pull it around?
I mean, for me, like, I was horrified when it was, should be like 21 into nothing. And then, you know, obviously we had the 2-point blocks, extra point return. And I was ready to go home at that point. But somehow in the second half, they got it done. I mean, defense was there. I mean, Flacco was still under pressure, but it made some passes. I mean, we're very lucky to get the win that we did. It was a tough game.
Well, it sounds like Don is navigating himself away from the win. But for you, Ben,
sorry about that.
It's okay. You saw, you know, Josh McCown went down with an injury early on. He came back. He seemed to tough it out. And Isaiah Crowell seemed to have a great game. But, I mean, there are no moral victories. But, I mean, given how tough of a fight you gave this Ravens team, how do you feel about this one?
Oh, I feel awful. You know, very similar to what Don was talking about. You know, we were up 20-0, getting ready to go for an extra point. Got blocked, returned, and that just pretty much, that's when the Browns decided they're going to be done scoring points. And then after that, Hugh Jackson just kind of forgot that he had a successful running game and just got extremely pass happy. McCown was getting crushed out there, just holding on to the ball way too long. And Hugh Jackson wasn't doing any favors, like wasn't calling running plays, just wasn't being smart. And then, you know, we got to talk about that taunting call, which is just total garbage. And then afterwards, McCown probably threw one of the worst picks I've ever seen. And I've had the luxury of watching, I don't know, like 57 quarterbacks since 1999 for the Browns. So, that, you know, just kind of tells you where the game kind of finished, the kind of note it finished on.
I agree on the taunting penalty. That taunting penalty was definitely BS.
Yeah, and so, I mean, for you guys, you know, Don, you're 2-0, but it was fairly close finishes against teams that I think most of the league don't think are particularly good. You know, how are you feeling that this sets you up in terms of the season? What needs to be fixed?
I mean, I'm not feeling great. I mean, you figure last week against the Bills, they had 160 yards of total offense, and the Bills, the first drive was 170 yards of total offense, the first two drives. I mean, Suggs looked lost, especially the first half. The whole team looked lost, but I'm very surprised that, like, I was figuring the Ravens would lose this game, but they ended up coming back, you know, squeaking out a win. But I'm happy about 2-0, but I'm not very confident going forward.
And for you, Ben, you know, hopefully McCown is you know, is rested and healed. But I mean, the fact that they made this a game without their starting quarterback, whatever you think of him, I mean, is there any optimism for you for the Browns, or is this just getting ready for that first-round pick?
Well, the optimism here is we have a bunch of really nice young guys on defense, like Emmanuel Ogba and Carl Nassib, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Those guys look like studs. Coleman had a really nice game here. Shelton is starting to play like a first-round pick, like he was picked too. You know, and so you're starting to see some building blocks and some pieces, and it's you know, you're starting to see a little bit of the future there. I don't think there's a whole lot of optimism for this season, but I do think we're starting to see some building blocks for next season.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, guys, and good luck next week.
All right. Thanks, Nick.
All right. Thank you.
This is Seahawks Justin back this time to recap the Patriots versus the Miami Dolphins, another division game. This is one, I'll be honest, I was very, very wrong about early, and then I got kind of right at the end. I predicted this to be within a score, and that's how it ended. But when the game started, Patriots immediately went up 14-0. Then they were up 24-3 at the half. It wasn't until late in the game, after Jimmy Garoppolo, who had been playing a really nice game, injured his shoulder and left, that Miami was able to pull it somewhat tight. It honestly came down to one final possession. Miami had the ball. They were within seven. They'd driven down to the into the red zone. Ryan Tannehill threw a pass up into the corner, and it was picked off, and that was the game. Honestly, I don't really blame that for him. You know, you've got to make the throw. The seconds were winding down. So, you know, it ended up being a really entertaining game. But there's certainly a few things to take away from that. The Jimmy Garoppolo injury is obviously huge. You know, he was already the backup quarterback. The Patriots certainly had ideas of him either becoming the quarterback of the future or becoming a really, really valuable trade commodity. And those two things are in jeopardy right now, depending on the nature of the injury. And I don't know, just sort of an observation. I feel like frequently the backup quarterback gets hurt a lot more often than the primary quarterback. I'm not sure why that is. I've long suspected that maybe, you know, if you play every down, you play all the time, you know, the way that you go down, the way that you protect yourself, it's a little bit more refined. You've got some more practice at it if you can, you know, be good at getting hit. So, you know, I'm often very nervous when I see a second-string quarterback going for that reason. But, you know, just like any time Belichick's ever lost his quarterback, they kept on humming. You know, this is not the first time we've seen them lose their quarterback and not miss a beat. It's probably not going to be the last time. So they end up coming away with the win. I do want to talk a bit about Miami, though. Ryan Tannehill, if you look at his stats, they look really good. He had almost 400 yards passing. I'll be honest, a lot of that was just garbage time catch-up. Yeah, he had three touchdowns, but he had two interceptions as well. He did not play a terrific game. Also, Arian Foster, who's a really good player when healthy, hasn't been healthy for several years. He ended up leaving this game with a groin injury. You know, I think we can all agree his best years are behind him, but depending on the nature of this injury, you know, are his productive years behind him? I don't know. That's something to really keep an eye on. No Gronkowski in this game, but Martellus Bennett played absolutely terrific. He's a really, really good player. I thought he was a wonderful pickup. LeGarrette Blount continues to be your classic 3 yards in a cloud of dust guy. He's just an absolute hammer. You mash against the opposing team, so he had a lot to do with their success. Danny Amendola continues to look like an absolutely terrific player. So overall, the Patriots still look very, very strong. Miami at 0-2 still look like they've got a long way to go before they're ready to challenge. Adam Gase, this is his first year. Hopefully, if you're a Miami fan, you just see them build over the course of the year and maybe come back strong next year. But at least at this point, it's clearly New England in the driver's seat in the AFC.
And it is now time to talk about the Cowboys' win over the Washington Indians. Oh, wait, no, it's not the Indians. It's the Redskins, which is more offensive. Either way, 27-23 over the Redskins in Washington. I am here with our Washington superfan, Neil. Neil, this was a game that went back and forth, but it slipped away from you at home. How did this all happen?
Well, first of all, Nick, that was a bit of a jibe, a bit of a weird jibe coming from a Chiefs fan.
Good point.
But fair enough, we have to take those jibes until we change our name, which hopefully won't be that too far in the future. Okay, Nick, I'm just really procrastinating to try and get this 5 minutes over and done with before I have to speak about the game. It was a poor game. Poor game from Washington. In terms of quality, it wasn't the best game you're going to see in this weekend. Washington went down 10-0 early on, following a field goal and a Ezekiel Elliott 1 yard run. Washington came firing back in the second quarter with 10 points to bring the game back to 13-10 at a half. Dan Bailey booted a field goal midway through the second quarter. So yeah, 13-10 at the half. Then start of the third quarter, Washington got the kickoff and took it 75 yards down the field to get into the lead for Washington, 17-13. And you thought at that point, great, the tide's turned, Washington have got the momentum, just shut down the Cowboys now and we will be on easy street towards our first win of the season. But sadly not. Our defense couldn't get the job done, and Dak Prescott, all credit to him, he drove the Cowboys 75 yards down the field to go ahead 20-17. And then, yeah, give the Cowboys some credit here. And it's not very nice to say such things, but they went for the onside kick. Didn't work out. Didn't kick the ball forward far enough. and it was touched illegally by Church. Washington got the ball back, round about the 38-yard line, and they then drove down. And this is where, I think, Nick, this is where you separate the good teams from the very good teams to the bad teams, and Washington sadly are in that bad team category at the moment. They only got a field goal after starting on the Cowboys 38-yard line, and you kind of know, don't you, this is going to spell trouble down the line. So it was 20-20. Dallas got the ball back, and our big free agent signing, Josh Norman, who had a really good game, he stripped the Dallas wide receiver with the ball. Stripped Elliott from the ball. It was covered by Phillips, our safety. And there we are, 1:46 to go in the third quarter, 20-20. We're sitting on the Dallas 35-yard line, and you think, right, this time, not a stupid field goal again. Let's bang this in, get a 7-point lead, and see this game out. But no, we couldn't do it. We got all the way down to near the end zone. I had to set up a 22-yard field goal. And there, 23-20. And, you know, that's two wasted opportunities, 6 points, and we should really have had 14 points. Back came Dallas. They got themselves into the lead with a really good touchdown drive. And I hate to say it, and as much as we love Alf Morris, he celebrated after that touchdown 4-yard run. And, it was very disappointing. Here in the UK, if you sign a player from one team and he scores against his former team, he has the decency to not celebrate. He just
puts his head down, turns around and runs back to the halfway line, and you get on with the game. But no, Alf Morrison celebrating, that was a bit sickening. And of course, sickening that he was the guy who scored the winning touchdown on the night. So there we are, missed opportunities from Washington. We did get the ball back, but I don't know. I would like to go into more detail, Nick, about the awful play calling for the second week running by Washington. But yeah, it was a game we probably should have won, but really in the end didn't really deserve to win. Dallas were just slightly the better team.
And always the final knife comes from the traitor. Ek tu, Morris? Yes. How did the quarterbacks look? You know, I mean, everyone's interested in how the Dak hype train continues. It seems like he had pretty decent numbers. I mean, he didn't throw a touchdown himself. He had his running backs do that for him. And Cousins, you know, he seemed to have a bit of an up-and-down game.
Sure. Well, I'll start with Prescott. Prescott finished the night with almost 300 yards. He had 292 yards. Like you say, no touchdowns, no interceptions. He had 22 completions out of his 30 attempts. Everything was very much fairly short to mid-range. He didn't really go deep at all in the game, and they didn't really test Washington really on the perimeter. Everything was kind of underneath. But he was accurate. He was poised. He was playing behind an offensive line, which gave him plenty of time. They didn't run the ball particularly well. They ran it often. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott did get 21 carries. But as a 4-yard average, which is fair enough, but maybe not what you'd expect behind that great offensive line. But certainly in pass protection, they were very good. Washington had a couple of sacks, but nothing, no kind of meaningful sacks, really. Prescott looked quite good, but I have to say, Nick, Washington's defense, I mean, could it be more vanilla? It is. You watch that defense, you look at them and you think, right, okay, what have we got here? We've got a rookie running back, we've got a great offensive line, we've got a rookie quarterback. Let's just blitz him. Let's just show him as many exotic packages as we can. Blitz corners, blitz safeties, blitz whoever. You're going to lose some plays. You're going to make some big plays, but you're going to get to the guy. And as a fourth-round rookie who dropped to the fourth round, not because like Russell Wilson, he was too short. He's a fourth-round rookie because based on his talent and based on the evaluations coming out of college of his play, this is not the second coming of Russell Wilson. We should have went after the guy, and we didn't. And I think we just gave him far too much time. We were three men rushes half the time on third down. We're dropping too many guys. And that's just, you know yourself, Nick, if you've got a great offensive line and you give the quarterback 6, 7, 8, 9 seconds to throw the ball, it doesn't matter if you've got Deion Sanders and Ronnie Lott in your defensive backfield. You're going to complete passes. And that's what happened, and it was absolutely infuriating to watch the Washington defense. It was awful. Anyway, I'm going slightly off subject. Getting back to Kirk Cousins, well, Cousins looks like he did on Monday night. He's throwing good passes, but they're slightly off. The accuracy is just not quite there. You saw a number of plays tonight, and there was a play to rookie Josh Doctson. I think that was in the third quarter. Jackson made a great move, took away all the Cowboys defenders. Doctson was all alone, and Cousins completed the pass to him, but it was a yard behind him. And this time last year, that pass would have been a yard in front of him. He could have ran onto it, taken it, and went to the house. In the first quarter, he missed Jameson Crowder for a sure touchdown by about a yard, just overthrew him by a yard. He did the same later on in the game to Jackson. And it's very difficult to overthrow DeSean Jackson with the speed that guy's got. So everything's just that little bit off. It's like somebody's just knocked his rhythm out by 10%, and that's showing up on the field. But having said all that, I didn't like the play calling by Sean McVay, our offensive coordinator. We were camped on the Dallas 6-yard line, and he threw two fades to the right corner. And Dallas just had the end zone packed with defenders. There was tight coverage on both plays. They were poor plays. And you think, 6-yard line, we're up by 3 points. Oh, no, it was all tied up at that point, 20-20. What do? You just hit Jones, the running back, a couple of plays. Run him up the middle, get some time off the clock. It's on the clock. And Jones was having his best game as a Redskin. He was averaging 4.7 yards a pop. And yet McVay decides to go two plays back-to-back, throws it into the corner of the end zone and fades. Both of them, just not possible to make them. And then on the third down, a bit of tension in Cousins' arms. He throws to Garcon, doesn't see, I think it was Church, doesn't see Church in the end zone, and he comes underneath the play and picks it off. Bad interception at a bad time, but I have to say, the play calling is as much to blame for that for me as Cousins was. Cousins otherwise, I mean, he's thrown for 360 yards, and he threw the ball to, I think, 11 different receivers. So he's plenty of targets, he had plenty of time to throw the ball, the offensive line was terrific. But no, it's just not clicking. And you can, and I put it down a little bit to this preseason, this not getting the snaps with the first team. It's disappointing, and now we're in an absolutely massive hole.
Well, you did mention that. We talked about the Giants going to 2-0 on the season earlier today. We have yet to see what happens with the Eagles as they're playing on Monday, but Dallas is now ahead 1-1, and the Redskins are at the bottom of the division currently at 0-2. Well, we hope you guys can turn it around there, Neil, and good luck for the rest of your season.
Don't hold your breath, Nick.
All right, well, thanks a lot, man. It's now time to talk about a sneakily very exciting game between the Tennessee Titans and the Detroit Lions. The Titans are on the road. You know, obviously they did not look particularly good in week one, but they win this 16-15 over the Detroit Lions. The Titans were behind most of this game. The Lions made their points fairly early and were just trying to hold on. But the Titans started really coming back. That was on the backs of big plays by DeMarco Murray. And Marcus Mariota was looking good. You know, we've been talking a lot about how he's progressed. And it's interesting that he is the real young star of this offense. And on fourth down, with about a minute left in the game, he throws the go-ahead touchdown to one of the oldest players in the league, future Hall of Famer Andre Johnson. I don't know how that ball got through there. It was just threaded right between three defenders, but definitely good to see Andre Johnson still got it. That put them ahead by 1 point, and the Lions had the ball. They were driving down to try to kick the go-ahead field goal as time expired, but as many Detroit Lions games do end, this one ended with Matthew Stafford throwing an interception, which is also, in a sense, a bit of a shame. The Lions clearly have improved quite a bit on offense from the first half of last year's season. And Stafford, outside of the pick, looked pretty good. You know, Marvin Jones looks like one of the best free agent acquisitions this offseason. He had 8 receptions for 118 yards. Anquan Boldin, another wide receiver, you know, one of those guys who's, you know, up there in age, possible Hall of Famer, still out there, and is really contributing for his team. He ended up with 4 receptions for 48 yards and a touchdown for Detroit. All right, it is now time for my game and the Chiefs' sorrowful loss, 12-19 in Houston against the Texans. And I am here with James, our Texans superfan. You know, I think a lot of people probably saw this coming. I think that the Texans really wanted to serve up the Chiefs a nice warm meal of revenge. But this was actually a close and sloppy and sort of a weird game. The Chiefs, in a way, actually played the role of the Texans in their playoff loss to the Chiefs last year. And that the Chiefs had 3 bad fumbles that killed drives. They handed it over to the Texans. The Texans had their own turnovers with 2 interceptions by Brock Osweiler to Marcus Peters, and actually a third that might have been an interception. I really wish the Chiefs would have challenged that. Either way, this game was really came down to which team capitalized on the other team's mistakes more, and that was the Texans in this one. But so, James, how do you feel in your sweet, sweet revenge?
Well, I mean, you know how these week two regular season games count almost as much as divisional playoff games. So while it's nice to definitely go 2-0 and very potentially have a 2-game lead in the division 2 weeks into the year, which would be, oh no, I'm sorry, the Titans did win. So, you know, definitely a 1-game lead in the division, possibly 2 on the other 2 teams. That's great. We can go into New England, a game that we weren't expected to win or aren't going to be expected to win and still come out of there with a winning record as opposed to potentially going in at 1-1 and then come out of there at 1-2 and kind of have a different narrative on the season already. So,
yeah.
But you brought up like the challenge. Yeah, that definitely was one of a couple questionable calls by Andy Reid. I know we went back and forth and everybody else kind of chimed in on our Slack group about how, oh, I don't know how the Texans are going to score. I don't know how the Texans are favored in this game. And about half of us were like, oh, yeah, absolutely the Texans are favored. You know, I'm being generous saying half. Maybe a third of us were on the Texans side with that. And one of the things that I think I brought up initially is, well, we don't have Andy Reid on our side. And so that's a big wild card because when it comes to clock management and, you know, challenges, Andy Reid's kind of all over the map. So in a close game with the challenge and then at the end, kicking a field goal from the 20-yard line, like I get that it's 4th and 7, but you're still going to have to recover an onside kick either way and get a touchdown. This is one of the most infuriating things that NFL coaches do in general. They just take the easy 3 points thinking, oh, well, now all we have to do is recover an onside kick, march about 50 yards, and then get into the end zone. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but, you know, give me one shot from the 20 to get into the end zone and then kick the onside kick and get a field goal because you're only going to need maybe 25, 30 yards if you recover the onside kick. I mean, especially with Santos, who I believe hit a career-long field goal in this game.
Yeah, he did, and I was okay with that decision only because it was like 4th and 7. I mean, if it was like 4th and 5 or less, I would have definitely been, you know, on your side, say go for it. But just, you know, the way in which the Chiefs really had trouble moving the ball and really moving the chains, they were horrible on 3rd down today. And so, you know, in a 10-point game when you have less than a minute left, they probably weren't going to get the onside kick anyway, in which case, like, well, let's just take the 3 points. We need a field goal and a touchdown. Let's just do it. And so, I mean, I don't think it would have changed radically what the game, you know, how it would have turned out. It would have just been 4 more points on the Chiefs side, but not enough to win. But I mean, the main thing was just that the Chiefs just were really shooting themselves in the foot in ways in which we hadn't seen for a couple of seasons, at least with this team, with, you know, really untimely penalties. The 3 fumbles I mentioned, 2 technically by Smith and, you know, 1 by Ware. One was a snap that went over Smith's head, so you can't really blame that on him, but he was the last guy who touched it, I guess. I mean, the Ware one was, you know, was a heads-up play by the Texans defender, put his hat on the ball, knocked it out. But, I mean, the other ones were just, I mean, it was Smith was scrambling, he should have thrown it away, he still had it in his hand for some reason when he got hit, like, and then the snap. There were just so many unforced errors on the Chiefs' side, and what everybody knew was going to be a close game. I did not really expect them to be able to turn it around halfway through this thing like they did against the Chargers because, I mean, this Texans defense is playing really well. J.J. Watt looked healthy. And the other big thing that worried me going into this was the fact that the Texans now have not only, DeAndre Hopkins on one side, but they have Will Fuller as an equal threat. And that at least showed up, at least in the first half. The Chiefs seemed to be able to tramp down on it. But, I mean, you guys were able to do quite a lot against a fairly weak secondary in the Bears. How do you feel about your team looking at them and how they performed against the Chiefs, which are a bit of a more upper tier team, shall we say?
Well, I mean, they did a lot of the same things against the Bears that they did against the Chiefs, where, you know, Brock's interceptions in the red zone are a perfect example of this. Like they seem to get on a roll and then they seem to just make these like core decisions. Like I think both teams combined to go 0-6 in the red zone, 0-4 for the Texans and 0-2 for the Chiefs. But I mean, you see Will Fuller, you see all the reason that he went so high in the draft, and then, you know, the very next play he's making this like bumbling, you know, eventual catch. There were, just like last week, there were some that he probably should have had that ended up dropping, and then he turns around and just makes an amazing lights-out play on the very next one. So that's very encouraging. You just have to kind of cut out these mental mistakes, which I know will come in time. It's definitely rough to, like, blame a rookie 2 games into his career on, lack of focus or not having quite everything put together. So that's very encouraging for later in the season. Doesn't make it any less frustrating to see at the time. Brock doing the same thing that he did against the Bears last week, where he put together a couple of good plays, and then as if he was like, doing a little heat check or felt that he was on fire from back in the NBA Jam NFL Blitz video games, he's like, oh, I can just thread one into Braxton Miller, no big deal. And that came back to get him a couple times this game. And, I was never expecting, even at the even at what we were paying him, to come out with a, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, or, an upper-tier quarterback, at least this first year. But you need somebody more like a more like Alex Smith, as much as Greg the Steelers superfan will hate to hear that, who can make the smart decisions, not turn the ball over. And then, even if you're not going to force it in there for a touchdown, you have to realize that 3 points in a game like this is huge.
Yeah, agreed. And the other big point swing that was decided by the refs that I didn't mention, but I just have to complain about shortly, is that, similar to in that playoff game, we had Nile Davis run in the opening kickoff for a touchdown to set things up. Late in this game, we had Tyreek Hill, our new, kick returner extraordinaire. He ran one all the way in, but there was a penalty on it that was a total phantom call. At least the number that they called for the block in the back, that guy was not. I mean, he was like face to face with the defender. I have no idea what they were calling there. It's one of those things that makes me wish that some more of these plays would be opened up to challenge. Because look, I mean, if you're willing to sacrifice your timeouts, maybe make the penalty for getting them wrong, worse. But I feel like something like that, where it's a kick return touchdown and a block in the back that may or may not have happened. I mean, that's as big of a turn in a close game like this as you can get. But either way, I mean, I feel like this game might have gone differently if it was in Kansas City. And these are two very, very evenly matched teams, and two that may be seeing each other in the playoffs by the time this season is over.
Oh yeah, I can definitely see a rematch potential later this year. And I agree on the replay stuff. I mean, I wasn't going to bring up the phantom call, blocks in the back on returns as well as holdings. It just seems like you can go on any single play and just circle the guy, you can pick out one guy who did a block in the back and one guy who did a hold on just about every return, just about every play. And, to have it called on a big one like that, you kind of think that ref is like, well, he's probably not going to take this one back. I'll throw that flag. And then when they end up taking it all the way back, it's like, well, now we have to justify it somehow. With replay, everybody said how replay was going to take all of these controversies out of there, but in a lot of respects, replay has just kind of added to it by, oh, well, we need to add, penalties to replay, personal fouls. We should, like what college does, and put targeting in on the replay system so that we can make sure we can get every single call right. And, personally, you should either have the ability to replay every single or review every single play, or none of the plays, because you're going to end up in situations like this where you have the discussion of, okay, well, now should we include holding penalties? Should we include personal fouls? That line is just constantly shifting. But at the end of the day, you still have, a human judgment call to be made. And, there's always going to be controversies that replay isn't going to solve.
Yeah, and another one that, we were just talking in the Cleveland Browns Baltimore Ravens game, where a taunting call was really critical towards the end of a game, and it was really just like Trevor Pryor apparently just tossing the ball to the ref, but accidentally the ball bumped into a Ravens player on the way, and therefore that was a 15-yard penalty. It was similar. I mean, Marcus Peters got a 15-yard penalty, which helped extend the Texans' drive by just wagging his finger at Nuke after a good defensive play. I mean, and it's like they've created this new emphasis on it, and meanwhile there were two catches that they had to like put the full text of the catch rule to explain why they were or were not catches, and both of them were so close. We could talk about these calls for days, but this was a weird game in a lot of ways, and the officials made it weirder, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean the taunting calls are always going to be questionable, because you don't have the boom mics out there picking up what exactly the players are saying. So, I mean, even if you get the Dikembe finger wag, like that by itself isn't that bad. However, maybe the player said something to, basically what they said is what initiated the taunting call and not just the finger wag. But as fans, we don't see that. And, you know, honestly, to swing a game like that just over a finger wag is really a silly thing.
Or colorful language. Something that we tend to have on this this particular podcast. But anyways, I know, James, me and you, we can keep talking about this game forever. But we got to give it over to the other teams. By the way, congratulations again on the victory, and hopefully see you in January.
Thank you, sir. It was a good game.
And in a game that I think I was probably not the only one picking in a survivor pool, that was the Carolina Panthers' home win over the San Francisco 49ers. And yes, I chose the Panthers as my eliminator pick, not the 49ers. Although, you know, as much as this seemed like this would be a blowout game, you know, we saw some really, really shaky work out of the Panthers against the Broncos in the season opener, but they were definitely back on track in this game. Cam Newton finished 24-40 for 353 yards, four touchdowns and an interception, you know, and his weapons all showed up. I mean, just, the stats are nuts. Greg Olsen had a beautiful 78-yard reception. He went. He had five on the day for 122 yards and a touchdown. Kelvin Benjamin is just a machine. He had seven receptions for 108 yards and two touchdowns, and is just a guy that the Panthers can always get the ball to somehow. But as much as they were really dominating the 49ers, this was 31-10 at some point in the fourth quarter. The 49ers came back, at least came back within striking distance of a win here, largely on the backs of Blaine Gabbert's pass to Vance McDonald, which went for 75 yards and a touchdown. Vance McDonald, by the way, is a guy that we talked about a few weeks ago as a fantasy sleeper, certainly for dynasty leagues. That was his only reception, but hey, you know, that'd be good for some fantasy points nonetheless. 75 points, 75 yards, and a touchdown. Torrey Smith also had a decent day and a touchdown, but as the 49ers tried to get into the hurry up, tried to keep passing, tried to get back into the game, it just wasn't enough. Blaine Gabbert threw two interceptions in the fourth quarter, which really killed you know, their comeback attempt, and the Panthers looked like the team we expected them to be. The 49ers have a lot more fight than I think a lot of people thought, but it's really the Panthers are the team that has some real legs for the postseason here, it seems.
All right, this is Justin, your Seahawks fan, here to talk about Los Angeles, the Rams, my Seahawks, my pain. This one hurt. Knew it was a possibility going in. The Rams always play the Seahawks super, super tough. I think in a lot of ways they see it as kind of their Super Bowl, and I do not mean it as an insult in any way. I know some people say it that way, but I don't mean it that way. It was a great game by the Rams. They always play the Seahawks super tough, so I always knew that this could happen, especially given the offensive line of the Seahawks. If there's one thing that makes for a really tough matchup for the Seahawks, it's a team that has a really good defensive line. And I think you saw that last week with Miami. I think you saw that again this week. Good news is there's significantly fewer of those coming up on the schedule. But with the Rams, it's just a matchup, man. And matchups certainly matter. Russell Wilson was clearly limited by the ankle. That decreased his mobility, which he sure needed today. Some of the players got banged up, which it doesn't sound like any of them are going to be serious. The one thing to keep an eye on is Doug Baldwin went in for an MRI on his knee. He did that in the second quarter, played through a lot more of the game. But he's such a beast, it wouldn't surprise me if he was able to play on an injury. Thomas Rawls got nicked up. He'll be fine. The other one I'm a little concerned about is Tyler Lockett, who had that really, really deep catch at the end. He's such a terrific player. Hopefully he's not too beat up. He missed a good chunk of the game. And that's what this game came down to. I don't know about you, but when I was watching it, I was just thinking up back to last week and so many other ones where 2 minutes to go, a touchdown to win it, but Russell Wilson's got the ball. Was there anybody on the planet who didn't think the Seahawks had a great shot to win this game? Ultimately, you know, immediately this huge bomb to Tyler Lockett, who makes a terrific adjustment to catch that ball. He's such a good player. Then things just get kind of gross, you know, false start, incomplete. And then finally there's that pass to Christian Michael, who fumbles. And that was pretty much the end of the game. It's tough. It happens. Christian Michael earlier in his career had kind of some fumble problems, but he's been more reliable. But the Rams seem to have a really good game plan, you know, very aggressive on the rush, did a great job closing down any holes for the running backs. The Seahawks, meanwhile, you know, they just didn't have an answer. Their running attack wasn't really able to open things up and move the ball. Russell was able to move the ball with the passing attack a little bit, but he very rarely had time. And so every time they did do that, he could maybe pick up, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 yards, but there's always a risk for a sack. And then, you know, I have to mention that what could have been such a huge, huge play, the Rams are in third down. Cassius Marsh comes up with a sack, but grabs the face mask. So what goes from being probably a 15-yard loss becomes a 15-yard gain and a first down. So that's huge. Yeah, there were some iffy calls, but it's football. They go both ways, and I'm not going to worry too much about that. So it hurts. I'm sad. Sounds like a few of the players hurt a little bit too. But, you know, this was one of the five or six games I had penciled in as, you know, a somewhat good chance of going either way. So on to next week. Go Hawks.
It's now on to the Colts, who fell 20-34 in Denver against the Broncos. The Broncos held on. It was getting a little bit close towards the end, but the final fumble scooped up for a touchdown, put the nail in the Colts' coffin. So, Lewis, our Broncos super fan, how are you feeling about this win, and how did you guys pull it off?
I mean, I felt pretty confident throughout the game. We were able to move the ball pretty well, running, passing, and the Colts weren't really able to move the ball so well. The Bucs had like 80 yards of passing offense in the first half, but the key problems for us during this game and probably games to come is actually finishing drives in the red zone. We're able to move the ball usually to the 40, to the 30, but we're going to have to do a better job of actually executing those drives and putting up more points on the board. And because of that, the Colts were able to hang in the game. Luck was able to make a few plays, and it was actually a 20-26 game. And they had a chance, the Colts, towards the end. I was actually thinking of going for it on 4th-and-1. Trying to end the game right now, even though the Colts have been doing a better job stopping the run towards the end. But our defense came through, big stop, and no timeouts. I still think we have the game in hand. But, I'm pretty happy about how the game turned out.
Well, and your defensive stars certainly showed up as we generally expect. You know, Von Miller had 3 sacks, 3 other hits on the quarterback, even batted the pass. You had Aqib Talib with an interception, pick 6. But I think a lot of people, you know, when they look at the Broncos, what they're continuing to look for and are, I guess, like they feel as the point of uncertainty is your quarterback. It's sort of been the story since the offseason. How did Trevor Siemian acquit himself today?
I mean, I think the offensive game plan was much different this week than it was last week versus Carolina. I think Denver took a little bit more deep shot down the field, but you also have to put into play that Colts were missing their top 3 secondary players. One of the corners on the Colts picked off Siemian when it was a 10-3 game. Denver had total control of that game as of that point. And it should have been a pick 6, but he pulled a hammy in the middle of the play. I think the Colts ended up getting 3 points on that drive. But regardless, Demaryius was still hurt and things like that. But they were able to push the ball down the field against this Colts secondary. I'm very interested to see how they play next week at Cincinnati. That's going to be, I think, their biggest test so far as an offensive standpoint. So we'll really learn a lot about how Trevor plays on his first road start, but today I thought he did pretty good.
And from the Colts' perspective, I mean, I think we expected their, you know, them to have a lot of defensive problems, and obviously, I mean, I think few people favored them in this matchup on the road in Denver, but what did you take away from their side?
I mean, I think they adjusted well towards the second half. The score really didn't dictate how close the game was, but I think towards the second half, they ended up executing much better. The run, Denver wasn't opening as many holes. They were able to get stops behind the line. And I thought the Colts played as good as they could with the players they had. Injuries took a toll on them during the game and before the game. So for that reason, I think they played as well as they could have.
All right, good stuff. Well, I do not wish you luck as the Chiefs super fan, but nonetheless, have a lovely evening.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, and it is now time to speak with the other AFC West team that lost this weekend, other than my Chiefs. It was the Raiders, who fell 28-35 at home to the Falcons. And Monty, our disappointed Raiders superfan, is here. You know, Derek Carr still had a good game, and there's certain bright spots, certainly, for the Raiders offensively. But, man, this defense had another rough outing. How did this all fall apart for you?
Well, I think I really have to take some credit myself. I blame myself. You know, earlier in the week, I disrespected Desmond Trufant, and Tim, our super fan, has told me time and time again, you know, disrespect Desmond Trufant at your own peril, and it'll come back to get you. And here we are, you know. Here I am, Sunday evening. My Raiders just took it on their home field, and I think it's my own fault for just disrespecting Desmond Trufant.
That is the way that works.
To be honest with you, though, this defense is brutal right now. They gave up over 420 passing yards to Drew Brees last week. Did one of them was a 98-yard touchdown pass to Cooks. They gave up almost 400 yards to Matt Ryan this week. Julio Jones wasn't at 100%. He had a kind of a bum ankle, and so did Mohamed Sanu. I don't know if you remember last year, the Raiders could not cover a tight end for the life of them. Like, they just weren't able to do it, and it seems like that is exactly what's going on right now. The linebackers and the safeties are not able to get back to cover the tight ends coming out across the middle. This defense is brutal, man. Like, I mean, Jack Del Rio went for it on a couple fourth downs, and he's putting some confidence in his offense, and I think that the week long you're going to hear the story that, you know, he's a gambler and all that kind of crap, but I think it just comes down to he knows that his defense is crap. Like, if you can't stop anything that the Atlanta Falcons are doing when their best player is hobbled and they're in your own home field and you can't stop them at all, like, you can't even sit down. I think that's why he's going for it. So there's a couple plays where your boy, my new boy, like our boy, Sean Smith, just got torched, and it was brutal. He didn't get benched this week, which is, I guess, an improvement. But, you know, he's looking across the field at the safeties like he was expecting some help. But he did not. I mean, Desmond Trufant was the best on defense, and the Raiders have got nothing to stop it. Mari Cooper made some amazing catches. Like, that dude needs to play on a team that can like stop the other team. Like, he's an all-star, he's an all-pro, he's like making amazing catches. One play, he had like a 50-yard play at the end that actually would have changed the title of the game a little bit, but he got shoved out of bounds by Desmond Trufant, and so that play didn't count. Yeah, I don't know, man. I've been drinking heavily. I've been running my mouth all week, all season. My phone is just blowing up in my pocket as we speak of people who just can't wait to take a shot. Bottom line is, this offense is good. We knew it was good. This defense is awful, and they spent a lot of money and attention and energy and time and focus on the defense, and they are not living up to the bill. And this is not going to get it done, man. Like, these are the kind of games you need to win, and this is not going to bode well at the end of the season if you're letting Atlanta come up into Oakland on the infield and run you out of town.
Well, and Sean Smith, you know, with his time in the Chiefs, he's got the physical frame and, like, long arms. He's strong. So if he can get a good press at the line, usually he'll be okay. The thing is, he does not have straight line speed, like actual, like, leg speed is not a part of his physicality. And so if teams can just, like, run past him or just run out routes on him, and the offenses have time to actually to get the ball off, like, he would get burned for the Chiefs too. What saved us from having that problem was that the pass rush was always getting there. But that was what we sort of expected out of the Raiders as well, you know, with Bruce Irvin and Khalil Mack, and what seemed to be a pretty good defensive line. Why is the pass rush not good? You only had one sack in this game. What's going on that side?
I think that's a great point, Nick. Watching this game, I mean, you know, the first week you kind of don't know what to expect. Second week you're kind of like, I'm expecting to see Khalil Mack take over some of these games. So the question that I would have is, Khalil Mack, All-Pro, I believe, and you know, take it with a grain of salt, but I believe he's one of the best young defenders on the planet. If teams are able to game plan to take him out of the game, then that, to me, means that the rest of that defensive line needs to step up, and that would fall squarely on the shoulder of Ken Norton Jr. Like, if you've got an All-Pro on your defense and teams are scheming to kind of take him out of the game and you can't find a way to get pressure on the quarterback from the rest of the guys in the front seven, like, that's a problem. Bruce Irvin did not do anything today at all. I mean, Mac, I don't know if you watch much Raiders games or just the Raiders games versus the Chiefs. Like, I swear to God, every time he's like one step away from hitting the quarterback every play, like in the box score, but he's disruptive all game long. Like, he's right there and he's good. So like, I mean, I'm watching him going, like, it's only a matter of time until he gets it. But the rest of this defensive line is not helping out. They're not getting in on the quarterback. I know Mario Edwards is out and that sucks. They got rookie, Jihad Ward, who's maybe, you know, he seems to be a little bit out of position on a few running plays, which changes the dynamic of the whole series. But yeah, this defensive line is not living up to what I expected them to be. I knew that linebackers were going to struggle, especially in coverage. And then the defensive backfield is still not on the same page. Like, Reggie Nelson is playing pretty well. He led the team in tackles, but that's not the guy who you want to be leading your team in tackles at home or on the road. It's just, I don't know, man. Like, I know it's early. I don't want to, you know, freak out in September because a lot of things can change as teams are getting it together. But the fact that Jack Del Rio is going for it on fourth down, he went for like, to believe he's got no confidence in his defense. The fact that his defense is giving up 400 yards passing to anyone that they've played leads me to believe that he has no faith in his defense. The fact that his All-Pro and top free agent acquisition aren't getting to the quarterback leads me to believe he has no faith in his defense. And just as a drunken jerk sitting at home yelling at the TV, I have no faith in the defense. So that's the problem.
Well, what can you say about the Falcons side? You know, they lost in a shootout against Tampa Bay last week. They win in a shootout essentially here. What did they show you?
I think that Trufante is good. He actually had a couple great plays against Amari Cooper. That was one matchup that he kind of landed awkwardly and hurt his knee. And then Cooper got a few points, but in the beginning, like the first quarter, Desmond Trufant is like one of the top-notch cornerbacks in the league. Their running game was awesome. So I didn't watch the game last week, and I know the Raiders' defense is definitely, I don't know, can we say ass on the podcast? The Raiders' rush defense is not good, and Devontae Freeman and Coleman both were just, I mean, they were ripping off good clips every time they got the ball. I think that Matt Ryan is, you know, underrated. He kind of falls into that realm of quarterbacks in the 12 to 18 no man's land where nobody wants to give him credit for what they do. But Matt Ryan was good today. I mean, he had one pick in the end zone. This game actually should have been a little bit further out of reach. David Amerson had a nice pick in the end zone, actually, that would have put this game out of reach. So that was one. It wasn't a particularly good play. It was just both guys made a play on the ball. He came down with it. But the rushing game from Atlanta was better than I thought it was going to be. I was hoping Julio Jones would be kind of banged up, but he's still a beast. And then the what is this guy's name? I know Jacob Tammy and this Hooper is another one of their tight ends. Tololo. The tight end just ate the Raiders apart, so I'd take a discount on that because I think that's more the Raiders' defense than their offense. But the Falcons are, you know, solid all the way around. I don't think they're on the same level as the Panthers, but, you know, they came into Oakland and handed us our lunch. So, I mean, I've got nothing but love for the Falcons.
All right, well, drink up, rest up, and we have to conspire to bring down the Broncos. The Broncos can't win this division again.
I can't deal with that all year long. Lewis, if you're listening to the podcast, get out on Twitter and start laying into me, because I got to tell you, man, like this reign of terror, this orange reign of terror needs to come to an end, and I don't know if I can handle it anymore. I'm switching from beer to the hard alcohol, because this was a tough week across the board.
All right, man. Well, it's a pleasure as always. Talk to you soon.
Peace.
All right, once again, this is Justin, your Seahawks superfan, talking about the Arizona Cardinals versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, I'm no Arizona Cardinals fan, obviously, but man, did they look really good today. This is a team that I think today looked like the team everybody expected. They were humbled last week in a defeat with what's left of the reserves of the Patriots. For Tampa Bay, man, they walked into a buzzsaw going up against this team after what they went through. And so with a final score of 40-7, Arizona just crushed Tampa Bay. Jameis Winston, who looked so good last week throwing 4 touchdowns, this week throws 4 interceptions. Carson Palmer, who looked so bad last week, threw a clean game, 308 yards, 3 touchdowns. Didn't even play the fourth quarter, as far as I can tell, which is exactly what you want. Rest the older quarterback. Larry Fitzgerald continued to look like a player who is, you know, one of the all-time greats, which in my opinion he is. So it's a fun game to watch if you're a Cardinals fan or just like the Bucks or just like seeing one team get shellacked. Some of the other standouts, you know, I was very much looking forward to the battle of Mike Evans versus Patrick Peterson. Here's a top wide receiver and a top corner going at it, and it pretty much went exactly how you'd expect. It was a very Patrick Peterson-like game. He absolutely beat Mike Evans on a deep ball, got ahead of him, came down with the interception. His athleticism is something that I don't think anybody at the corner position can beat. But later in the game, he also got beat for a touchdown. If there's one kind of chink in his armor, it's that he gets beat 4 touchdowns. So, you know, we'll call that one a draw. The other player that I kind of want to call out is Marcus Cooper. Marcus Cooper was the Arizona Cardinals traded a conditional pick to Kansas City for. He had a great game. He had 2 interceptions, one of which was a pick 6. So, you know, he did awesome. He made a huge difference in this game. The Cardinals scored 24 of their points in that second quarter, and that's when the game was pretty much over at that point. Jameis Winston threw over 50 passes today, which is not what you want to see over a still young developing quarterback. Jerron Brown of the Cardinals, his name is probably unfamiliar to you unless you've been listening to this show a lot. Dr. Jones, our Arizona Cardinals superfan, has been kind of banging the drum for him for a while, saying that he's a guy to watch out for. He had a really nice game today. All in all, outstanding effort for the Arizona Cardinals. I think that they kind of knocked themselves out of that funk that I'd been predicting all offseason. So watch out rest of the NFC for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. All I can say is not every week are you going to be going up against an embarrassed Arizona team at home. It's probably not going to be this bad for the rest of the year, but this game pretty clearly established where these two teams stand in the NFL hierarchy.
All right, we now turn to the San Diego Chargers' dominating performance against the Jaguars. They beat them at home 38-14. After a disappointing loss against my Chiefs last week there, Ken, how do you feel like your team responded?
Honestly, today was a breath of fresh air. The Jaguars superfan and I actually were at the game today, and we had a blast, but I had more of a blast only because my team showed up on offense. It didn't really feel like Keenan Allen was missing, and although Danny Woodhead did go down with an injury, that was horrible, but the rest of the offense picked up the slack, and it was awesome. And it was just really nice to see Ken Wisenhunt and Phillip Rivers get on a roll today. And I think this is what our offense is, not what we showed last week.
Yeah, I mean, Rivers went 17-24 for 220 yards, 4 touchdowns. And Melvin Gordon had himself a game as well with 24 carries for 102 and a touchdown. You think that this more shorter passing attack some of these, I guess my question is, what is particularly working well with Wiz's offense here?
Honestly, it's the offensive line. They are dominating up front. Today we faced a very, very potent Jacksonville defensive front, and they handled them. And so it allows Rivers to pick and choose. He does have Melvin Gordon, who I believe is a standard, awesome running back. And then we have these receivers who have upside, but at this point, they're nobodies. Travis Benjamin, nothing to hang your hat on. But he's a talented, speedy wide receiver. He caught 2 touchdowns today. So it just really comes down to, at this point in our season, when we don't have Keenan Allen, it comes down to the defense, the offensive line, and Philip Rivers to make it happen.
And from the Jaguars' side, you know, what went wrong for them? They gave the Packers a scare last week, but they were seemingly totally out of this game and just put up some garbage time points.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think the Packers are very good. And so for them to lay an egg this week against the Chargers, that doesn't bode well for them, because I didn't think the Packers were very good last week. The Chargers absolutely dominated them this week. And to me, I still need to see next week against the Colts is going to be a big test for us, because I don't think the Colts are very good either. And so I expect the Chargers to dominate them. But through 2 weeks, I still don't know what the Chargers are, because I still think our first two opponents, the Chiefs are good, but it got tainted by Keenan Allen's injury. And then I don't think the Jacksonville Jaguars are very good. So it'll be next week till we see the Colts for me to really be able to gauge whether the Chargers are actually good or not.
No. All right, good stuff.
Okay, this is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm here with Green Bay Brian. Brian, I hate losing to division foes. How do you feel about it?
It's the worst. So, at least Davey's not here to really gloat, I suppose. We can just commiserate together.
Yeah, right. We can just wallow in our misery. What will he's? I'm gonna assume drinking meat from a horn from a helmet or something.
Mm-hmm.
Just thoughts in general. What are you thinking about the game?
Well, I think if Mike McCarthy kicks the field goal at the end of the third quarter, it's a bunny field goal. There's no way we miss that. That we win in overtime without Peterson. The only semblance of offense they were able to generate was through Stephon Diggs, which we inexplicitly decided to continue to single cover. I'm disappointed with the loss. I did kind of think that it would be a 50-50 game for the Packers and a low scoring one, but doesn't mean I'm any less disappointed.
Yeah, I picked the Packers in this one, but that was mainly based on the fact that Teddy was out. You know, the Vikings are a good team, a division foe. It's certainly a high chance to lose that one, but Sam Bradford played a lot better than I expected. And I'll be honest, you know, I've maybe overrated the Packers defense a little bit. I know it's early, but how do you feel about that unit and how Dob Capers has them playing right now?
Well, aside from Stephon Diggs, who looked very good, like probably a little bit underrated at this point. Aside from him, I think we played very well. We shut down the run again. We didn't really let any other receivers beat us. Kyle Rudolph, who I was a little bit concerned about before this game, just given our history of against tight ends, he put up the touchdown, but didn't have a huge impact on the game. I feel like we were slow to react, and we never really reacted to Stephon Diggs. We just kind of kept rolling Demarius Randall over there to cover him one-on-one, and lo and behold, he continued to beat us. All in all, I think the defense would be fine if we would be a little bit more quick to react.
So you mentioned before Mike McCarthy. Let's talk about him a little bit. Is he a good coach?
It's a good question. Before last year, I would have said, no doubt, he's a great coach. But after the offense struggled for the entirety of last year, we didn't make any sort of schematic adjustments. Basically, the way that our offense runs is all of our wide receivers run individual routes. There's very little route combination, and we rely on the wide receivers to be better than the corners that they're playing against. Obviously, last year, without Jordy Nelson, kind of had to move our number two wide receiver to number one, number three to number two, and so on. And we really struggled to generate any offense. The part that's really scary to me is Jordy Nelson does not look like he's running at full speed yet. He looks a little slow. We're still not getting a ton of separation. And basically, the offense looks more or less the same to me, aside from a few series last week where things started to click. This game, and for long stretches of the game last week, our entire offense was reliant upon Rodgers taking the snap, dancing, running around a little bit, and then throwing a pass and relying on receivers to get open on kind of second reaction plays. And that was pretty much what we saw this week too, except Minnesota was able to generate much more of a pass rush than we saw last week. So, the offense didn't look too hot, and I'm nervous.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that, because the offense was going to be my next question. The other thing that I wonder about is that Vikings defensive line had some success. I feel like the Packers kind of voluntarily downgraded by jettisoning Sitton. What are your thoughts on how the line played and kind of your outlook for that offensive line?
Well, that's a great defensive line. I think Dave and I talked in the preview just about how underrated I think that their defense is, and I think he would agree. Sitton, it was a big shock to me. There's been some news that's been trickling out, and what the most recent news is that he was disappointed that he wasn't going to be the first priority for the contract. That would have been David Bakhtiari. They're going to focus on some of the younger guys, and he's kind of a boisterous, brash, doesn't pull any punches type of individual. And when he's playing really well, that the coaches are willing to put up with that a little bit. The more talented you are, kind of the longer leash you get. But after the back injury for stretches of last year, and then just the lack of a contract being negotiated this year, the concern was that he was going to become a locker room cancer. He was already kind of complaining about having to do certain drills, wouldn't do certain drills, was questioning play calling last year. And Mike McCarthy kind of told him, why don't you just worry about playing left guard? Let me worry about the play calling. So I kind of understand why they would want to get rid of him. We've got a group of young players in that locker room that I don't think we want those particular traits rubbing off on. But this is what you get. We didn't really plan for this. We didn't see Lane Taylor take any snaps with the ones in the preseason. And so there's going to be some growing pains. And when you play against the defense as good as Minnesota's, especially that front seven, Linval Joseph is a very good player. I think that defensive line in general is underrated. I think we probably could have played better if Sitton was in there. I hope it would have made a difference, but I'm not sure that it would have.
All right, Brian, thank you. Good luck the rest of tonight crying into your foam cheese head.
All right. Take care, Justin.
There you have it. Week 2 is almost in the books. We still have the Monday night game coming up. Thank you to all the super fans for their contributions. Please let us know what you thought. You can reach us on Twitter at NextFanUp. You can also reach us via email, nextfanup@gmail.com. We've got some opening for a couple superfan positions. So if you love your team, want to talk about them, think that you know way more than we do about them, please send us your application. We'd love to hear about it. And now, much to my chagrin, the victorious Jeff Fisher. Coach Fisher, you won. Please, what did you learn from your win today?
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.